Good morning and welcome to Spotlight on Industry. I'm your host, Sam Mason. This month on our show, we take a look at another industry that is near and dear to many people throughout the Midwest, agriculture. I myself grew up on a small acreage east of Kansas City. It was my dad's passion, really. As a poor Depression-era kid, he always dreamed of having a small piece of the earth where he could raise his family. We had a few Holsteins for fresh milk, some Angus for beef, cherry, peach, and apple trees for fruit, a large garden full of vegetables, and pasture land for hay. What we didn't consume, my mom canned, and then dad sold or gave the rest to neighbors, family, friends, and strangers. Nothing went to waste. My best memories are of sitting under the shade trees in our yard, snapping beans and picking cherries while talking with my mom. So this month, Karen and I spent some time on the R.T. Wright Farm at Northwest Missouri State University with Rod Barr, the director of the School of Agricultural Sciences. We'll learn about the increasing role of technology in agriculture, the school's expanding ag programs, and the abundant career opportunities that await their graduates. We'll also talk about the weather challenges that local producers have faced this year and how the use of cover crops can help improve the health of the soil in land that may have gone unplanted this year. We'll finish up by going on a tour of the Wright Farm and learning about some of the changes that are planned for that facility. Stick around as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at maryvillemo.org. And from Mazingo Lake Recreation Park. The park provides Nottoway County residents and visitors with an 18-hole golf course, driving range, and a 9-hole junior course coming 2015. More on Mazingo's golf offerings is at mazingolake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
The agriculture program at Northwest Missouri State University is an ever-evolving thing. In 1910, the school's president, H.K. Taylor, proposed an experiment to the Board of Regents that through student labor, market gardening could be produced with profit. The venture was meager. It consisted of an onion patch south of the unfinished administration building. It wasn't much of a success, but it laid the groundwork for other programs that would be successful. The importance of agriculture continues to expand and cross over into new areas of technology and science as it grows. So do the programs and degree offerings at the university. This morning, we're shining the spotlight on Northwest Missouri State University's School of Agricultural Sciences. Our guest is the school's chairman and director, Rod Barr. On this program, we normally focus on factories and manufacturing, but there is absolutely no denying the fact that farming and the business of agriculture is one of the largest industries in the world, and certainly here at Northwest Missouri State University.
That'd be correct. It's, you know, when you start looking at it, when we start taking a look at the agricultural industry as a whole, 18.5% of the population is directly involved in some sort of agriculture. Now, and that's a lot more than production agriculture. It's the processing, the distribution, the marketing, really anything from taking that from the farm to getting it to our tables as food. That's what agriculture is all about.
So obviously the goal of this program here at Northwest Missouri State is to provide students in the School of Ag Sciences with leading edge experiences in the field. But let's go back a little bit and talk about what we're doing differently today that we weren't doing 20, 30, 40, even 50 plus years ago.
Absolutely. I think when you start looking at what the changes in agriculture, it's just like everything else, technology. And that can be the technology when we start talking about precision agriculture from the auto guidance and auto shutoffs and precision planting to the use of UAVs in agriculture, to just the development of different hybrids and what we're starting to see with the amount of production and feed efficiency. And there's just all kinds of technological advances in agriculture, and that just continues, and that's going to continue at a faster rate. We know that technology is going to continue to change, and we have to stay on top of that as best we can, and make sure that our students understand how that technology impacts them, and be able to solve problems and think critically. We may not know exactly what that technology is going to be 5 years from now, but we do know it's going to change, and our students are going to have to be able to adapt to that change to be successful. So that's what we're trying to do, is to be able to show students how that technology is changing today to get them ready for the future. And we do the best we can to stay on top of technology here. But we've really got to have our students be ready to accept change. I think that's one of the things that we do really well, is that we try to show students that, hey, this is the way it's done today. This is the way that it may have been done 10 years ago, but this is the way it's done today. And we're not sure exactly how it's going to be done in the future, but there may be changes out there, and be ready for those changes and be able to adapt.
Now, a lot of these students, of course, they're coming from family farming backgrounds, that they're going to someday take over farms from their fathers, their grandfathers, great-grandfathers, certainly even land that was homesteaded. So it's important that those students understand today and be able to go back to those farms and say, you know, look, Dad, this is the wave of the future. We really need to get on board with this.
Well, and I think it's not just only those. It's not just the people in the production side. It's across the board. We've got a lot of people in agricultural business, and I know we've been dealing with building the partnership with AgriVision. And that's one of the things that they say, too, is that the new people that are coming into the industry, they have to have a full understanding of why we're doing what we're doing. It's not just because it's new technology. It's to improve efficiency and profitability. And I think that's one of the things that we have to take a look at. It's not just because it's something new. It's something that is either going to improve productivity that's out there, or improve efficiency, which ultimately takes a look at profitability. And for an example, is precision auto guidance the best solution for everybody? No, it's not. For some producers, it doesn't make any financial sense for them to go in and purchase all of the new equipment that is needed to go with auto guidance. But for some producers, it is. And I think that's one of the things that we have to teach our students, is how to make those management decisions. It's not just what's the next new thing, and how can we utilize that to improve efficiency, improve productivity, improve profitability. Profit margins are getting smaller, and that's a challenge that's going to face agriculture. Well, if it's going to reduce profit margin, then to an extent where it's not profitable, that's probably not the right decision to make. And I think those are the things that we have to, the skill set that we're taking a look with our students, is when you are making a decision, does it make financial sense to make those decisions? And I think those are the things that we have to teach. And again, that's that critical skill, problem-solving skill set, that it really doesn't matter what you go into that you're going to need, and it's going to help you be successful.
Now, the field of agriculture is so vast. I mean, it certainly is far more than putting seeds in the ground and watering them and watching them come up. And your programs here at Northwest really run the gamut, so that students coming in have a multitude of options. Tell us a little bit about some of those programs that you're offering here.
Absolutely. We have 7 undergraduate Bachelor of Science degree offerings. Agricultural business, that's our largest degree program. Probably somewhere in the neighborhood of 225 to 250 of our 550 students are seeking that degree. That continues to grow, and part of it is just because of the job opportunities that are out there. The USDA just released their next 5-year report. That 5-year report says that there are going to be 59,000 job openings annually in agriculture, including agricultural business. and about 24,000 agricultural graduates from agricultural institutions. So we've got to do a better job of, one, recruiting students into the agricultural field. Whether they come from an agricultural background or not, there are tremendous opportunities. It's really a STEM-related field that's out there. So when we move past from the ag business, we have an animal science and animal science pre-vet degrees, two separate degree offerings. But we kind of combine those two because what we see is we have a lot of students that might enter in the pre-vet program. In all reality, they find out that animal science is the way that they really want to go rather than pre-vet. And we have probably 125 to 130 of those students. Agronomy and agricultural sciences are our fastest growing majors, partly because that's where a really tremendous job opportunities, especially on the agronomy side of things. We're seeing some really good opportunities for our graduates to go into the plant sciences. We also have an ag education degree. We also have a horticulture degree as well. One of the things on the ag ed side of things, we tremendous job opportunities in ag education right now. Nationwide, we're seeing a lot of our ag educators, they are actually retiring or they're moving into industry. So it's pretty lucrative for our ag ed degree students. They can write their own ticket of where they want to teach and get into that teaching opportunity. So we've got those seven. We also have kind of a unique to our university was we have a Bachelor of Technology degree. It's really designed for our students for that go to a two-year community college. They graduate with an AAS from a two-year community college and then transfer to Northwest to get a four-year degree. We try to make that as seamless as possible. It allows those students generally to be able to get a four-year degree with a year and a half to 2 years of additional schooling. They don't lose very many hours when they transfer. We see that as a tremendous opportunity for those students to come in here, continue their education, and then be successful as they graduate.
Your program partners with companies as well. And earlier this winter, I attended a press conference for the company in Australia that we're partnering with the dairy herd.
Absolutely.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
Integrated Animal Health, they're a company that has recently opened up North American operations. They are an Australian-based company that looks at natural additives to improve herd health. And Larry Lee, director of the CIE, and myself, we traveled to Kansas City on one of the coldest nights in November to meet with Rob Neely, the CEO from Australia. We invited him to make a return visit to Northwest. And they came up and visited, and they went out to the farm and took a look and said, and saw what we did and said, hey, this is something that fits. And I think we have some tremendous opportunities for that to grow. It's going to give our students and our faculty some tremendous opportunities that we haven't seen before in developing some trial work with their products. If we're doing the right things, that industry will recognize that. And I think that's the partnership that we're going to be developing with Integrated Animal Health is going to be something pretty special.
And one of the things I thought was interesting about our partnership with them is that we're not the only college that they're partnering with.
Blake Holly, their CEO for North American Operations, sent me a presentation that they had used in New Zealand. And, you know, you think this is a pretty big deal. And then it came to, I think it was slide number five. And I sat here and I just looked at it and then it really sank in. And the other institutions that they're looking at working with, K-State, University of Kansas Med Center, University of Georgia and Purdue, North Carolina State, University of Missouri, and Northwest Missouri State. And when you start looking at that, those are some pretty key players in agricultural research and agricultural education across the board. So we're pretty excited for Integrated Animal Health to take a look and say, hey, Northwest Missouri State University is doing something right.
Changing gears just a little bit, let's talk about the student body makeup. Once upon a time, I'm sure that in this agriculture program, most of your student body were kids who came from the family farm and maybe wanting to learn something new that they could take back to that farm. What does the typical ag student look like today?
I don't think there is a typical ag student, to be quite honest with you. Probably that question gets asked to us a lot. How many of those students go back to the family farm? I would probably say that maybe 10%, 10 to 15% are actually going back into production agriculture on the family farm. With that, we're seeing a lot of students that are 2 to 3 generations removed from the farm. They remember their grandparents having a farm. They've had a love for agriculture. They've come through a good high school agricultural education program, and they see the opportunities. And I think that that's the big thing, is that it really doesn't matter if you have a farm background or not. Agriculture is much more than production, and we're starting to see the opportunities in the sciences for science students, in biotechnology, in plant breeding. And really, if you take a look at any career that's out there, we can tie that to agriculture. And so, you know, we just come on board with a new ag communications minor that we're really, really excited about. We think that that's going to provide some opportunities not only for our students to pursue that minor, but students in the communications field and mass media to pursue agricultural minors. I know that there are needs all of across the agriculture industry. They're looking for students and potential employees that understand the agriculture industry.
Now, the farming industry has had some real challenges this season.
Absolutely.
We've had a tremendous amount of rain.
Mm-hmm.
And so as we drive south from Maryville on Highway 71, we see last year's cornfields that should be planted in beans right now. Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about the impact that the wet weather this spring is going to have on this year's yield.
Yeah, it's going to have a negative effect. There's no doubt about it. State of Missouri, only 30% of the soybeans had been planted. So we're going to see a lot of reduced yields. Most of our producers, they have crop insurance, and if it's on preventative planting, that'll help. But it still doesn't make up for everything that's out there. It's definitely going to be a challenging year. Even the crops that are in the ground, they don't look the best. You know, we've had a lot of rain, and that is causing some nitrogen deficiency in our corn crops. You know, our soybeans, we're seeing some of those. Even if they got in, did they get the germination rate and emergence, even that and the corn as well? That's the next challenge. Even the soybeans that are going in today, a lot of them are going in on that ground that's a little bit marginal if it's dry enough, but we've got to get it in the ground. We're at the mercy of the weather. I do appreciate the farmers. They're eternal optimists. They truly believe that they're going to have a crop, and I'm grateful for them every time I sit down and eat a meal. And it's going to be an interesting year. We'll come through it. We always have. But there are going to be some challenges out there.
There are so many consumer products made out of soybeans. Ultimately, the low yield that is probably projected for this year is going to have an impact on consumer prices of all of these products. And it could be everything from crayons to...
It really could. One of the things that we have that going for, I don't know if it's going for us or going against us, we had a large carryover. We had record crops last year. And with that, you know, we've got low commodity prices. We'll see where that goes. It'll be real interesting to see what USDA says on their reports. I haven't heard where they stand on that, but we're going to see reduced yields. How much that's going to impact what we pay as consumers, we are going to see some fluctuation in prices. How it's going to impact us, it's yet to be seen. We still have one of the lowest food costs in the world. We still have a very affordable and safe food source, and we're very fortunate for that.
All the talk that we've been having about the impact of, you know, the low yields, fields that didn't get planted, kind of leads us into our next conversation about cover crops. That's something I've been hearing a little bit more about, and I don't know if that's something that maybe perhaps, you know, started on, you know, West Coast, East Coast, kind of working its way in, or is that something that farmers do on a routine basis?
It's been around for a long time, and it just hasn't been. I think it's caught on a little bit more here recently. Agriculture always finds a way to sustain itself. It's sustainability. There's no one that cares more about the ground than the producer that's on it. And I think that that's one thing consumers really need to understand, is that those producers generally are living on that land, and they don't want to do anything to harm that land. And they're finding ways to make sure to sustain that land for the future generations. And one of the things that we're starting to see is the use of cover crops to do that, to improve soil health through planting various crops to put cover onto that ground either during the winter months or to in the early spring when we can add some nutrients back into that soil. And that's one of the niches that we found and we utilize here on at the RT Wright Farm and here on our campus demonstration plots, is that we're using a lot of different cover crop mixes and taking a look at what can we do. One of the challenges that we face, you know, we have a 448 acre farm and then we rent about another 500 acres, and that's evenly split between pasture and hay and row crops, but we have to produce enough feed for our livestock. And one of the things that we're always looking for is what can we do to improve efficiency and productivity of our ground. And one of the things that we think we can do is the addition of fall grazing cover crops. So we've incorporated that. Not only does that provide a feed source for our livestock, it also helps to improve soil health. Really looking at what can we sustain that for the future, reduce the amount of potential fertilizer use, using some natural plants to put nutrients back into the soil and improve overall soil health.
And so you've talked mentioned a lot about the RT Wright Farm here. And in just a few minutes, we're going to go out and take a tour of that farm. What are some of the things that we're going to see out there?
You're going to see one thing that we take pride in is I think you're going to see a working farm. And it's really not a research facility. It's a working farm, and we take a lot of pride in that. You're going to see a 448-acre facility or a facility that has diversified row crop and forages and diversified livestock, and giving our students experiences that they may not have had before they get here. We have a lot of students that have never worked with livestock. They may be an animal science major. They've never had an opportunity to work with livestock. We've got the sheep flock. We've got the dairy. We've got the hogs. We have the beef. So they get that hands-on experiences out there. Last fall, had our faculty record the experiences. We wanted to quantify and qualify hands-on experiences in our program. And what we found out was we identified 155 different activities that our students did that our faculty considered hands-on. And when we figured out student contact hours with that was over nearly 15,000 hours. So our students are getting those hands-on relevant experiences, and that the farm allows us to do that in a setting that some of our students don't get the opportunities to see.
Rod, thank you very much for your time. Before we end our interview, I just want to give you one last opportunity to talk about the final thing you'd really like for people to know about the ag program here at Northwest Missouri State University.
Well, I think that the thing that we're really focused on is student success, and that's very important to us. We're trying to make sure that we have relevant programs, building partnerships, not only with industry, but the community. We're very community-minded. We want to make sure that we're meeting the needs of the community and giving the students the opportunities to be successful when they graduate.
All right, very good. Rod, thank you very much for your time today, and we'll look forward to taking our tour of the farm.
That's Rod Barr, director of the School of Agricultural Sciences at Northwest Missouri State University. Rod also mentioned in our conversation that the school's graduates enjoy an extremely high placement rate. In fact, 97.5% of the students who finish their degree find jobs in the agriculture field within 6 months of graduation. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, Rod will lead us on a tour of the R.T. Wright Farm and will tell us about some of the exciting future plans for that facility. Stick around.
Support for Spotlight on Industry on KXCV KRNW comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, coordinating economic development services for the City of Maryville, Nottoway County, and the Maryville Industrial Development Corporation. Their services include finance and incentives development, site location, industrial development, and small business assistance. More at maryvillemo.org. And from Mazinga Lake Recreation Park, the park offers residents and visitors camping facilities for tents and RVs, as well as lakeside cabin rentals. Mazinga Lake also offers boating, fishing, hiking, and equestrian trails. More information about Mazingo is at mazingolake.com. Support also comes from the City of Maryville, Missouri, offering residents and visitors opportunities in education, employment, healthcare, and recreation, as well as agricultural, industrial, retail, and professional services. More information about the City of Maryville is at www.maryville.org.
Welcome back to Spotlight on Industry. If you're just joining us, we've been visiting with Rod Barr, director of the School of Agricultural Sciences at Northwest Missouri State University.
In just a few minutes, Rod will take us on a tour of the R.T. Wright Farm. The farm is a working facility that serves as a training ground for students in all disciplines of the agriculture field. The institution that we now know as Northwest Missouri State University began in 1905 as the 5th District Normal School. From its earliest years, the institution saw the need to offer courses in agriculture. These early courses were simply theory that was taught in a classroom setting. The school saw fit to practice what it preached, so a few small garden plots were established to instill farming practices. Many of these plots were established on the front lawn of the school building, which is now, of course, the administration building. A few long-term plans were made, but nothing really took root until 1915, when a greenhouse was erected just north of the powerhouse on the east side of campus. This gave agriculture students a place to work and start summer flowering plants for the campus grounds. A dairy barn and other buildings started to pop up by the late teens and early 20s on the northwest side of campus where the current Garrett Strong Science Building stands. Eventually, land would be acquired north of the Wabash Railroad line, and by the 1990s, the 448-acre Wright Farm was established further north of town. As we'll learn, the farm provides students with hands-on experience in almost all disciplines of farm operations, from agronomy to animal science. The farm has a few sheep as well as a hog operation, a dairy herd, and a beef herd. Upon first arriving at the farm, it was nice to take a few moments to just stand quietly and enjoy the atmosphere. It was a nice, warm summer morning, and things were very peaceful. The wind was about the only thing you could hear. After soaking in the atmosphere, we climbed into one of the farm's vehicles and took a driving tour. Our first stop was the new beef production barns.
Our beef herd consists of 100 beef cows, registered Charlet and Angus. The registered Charlet herd is nationally recognized. It's very got some pretty good genetics in our Charlet. The building here on the left is our new beef, one of our new beef facilities. Very fortunate that we were able to repurpose some of the storm damage dollars that we had 4 years ago to put up a new large beef production facility. This past year, we put in a supplementary beef facility here to the south. So it's been good. We've been able to take down three of the older buildings that have been here for nearly at least 40 years. We know that they had been here, and see that we're going through and removing those. We've got two of them that have been completely removed, and this will be out here within the next month. So pretty excited about that. You can see that building there isn't near like what we have today. We've got a much nicer facility that's going to allow us to do a lot more education and just gives us some place to get in out of the weather as well. Helps improve what we do.
So your beef herd's all then taken to market in the fall, and does any of that meat that's produced stay here locally?
We don't feed our steers out here on the farm. We private treaty those onto a local feedlot. We retain ownership with those, and they're fed there. And then those are, as soon as they get to market weight, those are just marketed on into the regular marketing channels.
How does your production or your process here differ from the much larger scale commercial operations?
Really not much. I mean, that's one of the things that we take our pride in. This is when you come to our farm, and when our students are on our farm, it's really a working farm, and that's really what we pride ourselves in. We're trying to do things as close to as what they'll see in the industry. It's just on a smaller scale. And there are a few things. There are times when we're doing some applied research projects that might change things up a little bit, but we're really trying to emulate what our students are going to find out in industry and what's there. We do have some challenges that others don't face. I mean, but we are trying to make sure that it is as close to what they'll find in the industry as possible. It's one of the things that allows our students to be ready and hit the ground running when they graduate. That's what we're hearing from our employers. And the other thing is, I think what it does is that we're giving our students the opportunity to see the entire agriculture industry in a 458-acre farm
being very diversified like we are, you know, it's probably, this is a little bit against the norm that you would see on a 450 acre farm, is with the amount of diversification that we have, because we have corn, soybeans, alfalfa hay, we've got pasture, we've got dairy, we've got beef cattle, we've got swine, we've got a few sheep. So we need those to teach our students the entire industry, and that poses some challenges as well. You know, it's one of the things that would be a little different than what we would probably see out on the countryside and in the farms, but it's what we need, because we have, with our animal science degree, our agronomy degree, our ag business degree, really all of our degrees that we have, we just want to make sure that the students have those experiences here that are there. The other thing that we know is because we're in education, we need to be advocates for agriculture, and that's really teaching students about agriculture, teaching non-students about agriculture and what happens and what's going on. That's an important aspect of what we do. This is our dairy. We have approximately 70 cow grade A dairy that cows are milked twice a day, morning and then in the evening. That milk is then marketed through DFA, Dairy Farmers of America, and sent into the local marketing chain. It's one of the things that we're looking into in the future. With our new Ag Learning Center, a lot of people remember when milk was, you could purchase the milk from the University Dairy when the University Dairy was on campus, we're exploring the possibilities of putting dairy processing, some small dairy processing facilities into the Ag Learning Center that potentially could be, allow us to process the milk into yogurt and or cheese or even raw milk, possibly even ice cream. Don't know exactly where that's going to go, but it gives us the opportunity to include the food science aspect of agriculture into our curriculum. That's one of the areas that we'd like to continue to add into our curriculum, and with facilities we'd be able to do that. The other thing that it allows us to do is it allows us to take and show farm to food, show the entire process from the raw commodity to actually a food product, and that's really what agriculture is all about.
As Ron pulled the truck up to the dairy barn, we stopped in front of several small pens, each containing a Holstein calf, which my dad would have called bottle babies. They were just finishing their breakfast, so we got out to take a look and learn a little bit about the herd.
So what do we have here?
This is one of the dairy calves. The cows, will pull the dairy calves off so the cows can go into production. If they're heifers, we'll hold them back, put them over into the lot. If they're bull calves, we sell those and we market those so somebody will grow those out. So we've got a few brown Swiss. Most of our dairy cattle are Holsteins. We've got a few Jerseys, but predominantly our dairy herd are Holsteins.
As we were talking, the farm's dairy herdsman, a man named Ray Ashbaugh, greeted us, so we listened in as he gave Rod an update on the calves.
Well, I took them up to my farm. Mm-hmm. They was all confirmed pregnant. And I got, like, out of 18 head, I got 7 or 8 black ones.
So they weren't all...
What Dr. Free told me, he said he moved them too soon after breeding. He said, you got to wait 90 days. Then I got to thinking on that. One calf last night, almost a 3-year-old heifer, she was bred 5 months and lost it somehow. But they're here.
The calves.
And and just like Jim said, every one of them come out. Got up, got going. The heifer cleaned, and she's a milking.
Yep.
Didn't lose one of them.
Good.
I didn't have to pull any of them. So I couldn't ask for better.
I could tell by the way Ray was talking about the herd that he has a love for dairy farming that goes far beyond just coming in and doing his job every day. I asked him if he'd grown up around dairy breeds.
I got a love for dairy when I was five. One of my dad's friends milked. And I would go down, we'd go visit him, and we'd watch him milk. And I thought that was neat. And that never left me. It should have. But it didn't. And I've enjoyed it.
How long you been doing this, right?
Be 33 years in August.
You ought to be an expert by now, right?
I learn every day. Something new. Cows don't read books. They come up with new stuff every week or something new. It's a challenge.
Ray loves those cows about as much as he would anybody. If he had kids, he loved those cows just as much. So he's been here a long time.
It's been said that many hands make light work, and this is certainly true on a farm. Ray is just one of many people besides the students that work at the farm. I asked Rod to tell me about their staff.
Let's see, we've got one, two, three, four. We got four university full-time university employees out here. We've got the full-time farm manager, Jim Hoos. He oversees the entire operation. We have a herdsman for each of our livestock species. We've got a dairy herdsman, Ray Ashbaugh, our swine herdsman, Greg Van Dyke, and then our beef herdsman, Robert Fulton. So they're responsible for each of those. And then we've got Jim really kind of oversees the agronomy side of things in addition to the overall management of the farm. And then we do have some student employees that work out here, especially that assist with the milking of the dairy cows. And then we've got two general employees. We'll use them in whatever capacities that we need to get.
We left the calves to their breakfast and walked up the hill to take a look at the rest of the herd in the cowshed. They'd already been milked that morning, so they were quietly eating and standing in the breeze created by large fans and misters. I asked Rod to tell me a little bit about their diet.
It's a corn silage. This is from last summer that we ensiled, and we ensiled in bags. We try to produce all of our own feed here on the farm for all of the livestock that we raise. Making sure that taking a look at the ration to make sure that it's got the right nutritional requirements for the livestock and for optimum production. It's one of the things that our students will take a look at is they'll take a look at different rations and calculate different rations. We also have some applied research going on with a couple of companies taking a look at feed additives, all natural feed additives, and how that goes into the milk and how that improves and boost the milk production as we're moving forward. So one of the things that, public's very concerned about is healthy food, and rightfully so, and we're trying to do everything we can to make sure that that happens and taking a look at different things that can improve production levels.
Well, they seem pretty content.
Yeah, they are. They're in much bellowing going on. You want happy cows. That's the thing. What you really want in a dairy, this is what they tell me. I don't claim to be a dairy person. Is that you want them to eat? You want them to go lay down, and then they'll go into the milking parlor. Like I said, we milk early, 5 o'clock in the morning, and then late in the afternoon. We milk twice a day. So we want our cows to be content. That means that. There's not a lot of stress. Stress will cut down on production, so that's one of the things that we'll do. We'll have them, the fans will go. We do have misters if it gets hot, so that'll help keep the cows cool.
One of the common practices that we see among the companies we've profiled on this program is that of sustainability. Every company we've visited has had some sort of plan in place to reuse, recycle, and repurpose everything they possibly can. The R.T. Wright Farm is no exception. What the cows eat has a direct impact on both the quality and quantity of the milk they produce. Just like on any farm, there is never a shortage of the stuff that doesn't get turned into milk. I won't go into any more detail. You know what I'm talking about. The farm has a plan for that stuff too, Rod explains.
Adjacent to the freestall barn for the dairy is our separator.
What we do here is our waste, the solid waste, is separated from the liquid waste. Liquid waste goes into the lagoon. That is then pumped back onto the crop ground, used as fertilizer. We separate the solids. Those will go into a composting pile where that's mixed with some of the university food scraps from the student union and turned into compost that's used there for landscape services. So, again, promoting sustainability and taking a look at different ways to utilize byproducts, really, for other services.
We've heard the word technology mentioned several times throughout today's program, and it's interesting because agriculture is an ever-evolving thing, and technology has always played a role. If we look at recent history, the invention of the steel plow in 1837 introduced not only new technology, but also a revolution in the entire industry. In 1871, Louis Pasteur invented a new technology that also revolutionized the food industry. In 1895, refrigeration was introduced in the U.S. and England, further revolutionizing the agriculture industry. In 1974, the first rice hybrid was invented in China, and in the year 2000, genetically modified plants were being cultivated around the world. At one time, these were all breakthroughs in technology that revolutionized an entire industry. When we think of technology in agriculture today, we think of the electronics that are being placed in farm equipment. This equipment is expensive and to some unattainable, but to the students in the School of Agricultural Sciences at Northwest Missouri State University, they're given the opportunity to work with the latest in ag technology every single day. Rod explains.
One of the other things that we've been able to do is build industry partnerships. That's one of the things that helps us out immensely out here at the farm. One of those industry partnerships that we have is through Case IH with the local Durr dealership in Savannah. We're a Case University, which allows us to get some of the equipment on at low-cost leases, and that's really beneficial to us. In other instances, for example, the planter you see here on the left, that's a demo planter, so we don't pay any lease cost for that. Really helps us out. It gives us the latest technologies to use here on campus with that. Another partnership that we've developed is with AgriVision out of Southern Iowa. They've provided a tractor for our precision ag courses and to allow that. So our students learn, trying to diversify and make sure that our students understand the different systems that are on both green and red. It really helps us out, and we're very appreciative of those industry partnerships. Makes it a lot easier for me as a director that I don't have to worry about how I'm going to pay for a $600,000 combine when we're getting those from the implement dealers like Durr Equipment. A lot easier.
Certainly one of the advantages that I see for your students is even those who come from an agriculture background, from a family farm, they're going to get the opportunity to work with brand new state-of-the-art equipment that they may not be able to afford on their family farms.
Absolutely, and even that's the same way for us as well. I mean, it's one of those things that, you know, if we were to buy, and we do own some equipment, but we can't buy brand new equipment every year, so this allows us to upgrade, and if there's something new that comes out in technology wise we're able to integrate that into our curriculum immediately, and that's very beneficial for us. That's one of the things that I think, again, that's why it's so important to have the industry partnerships that we're out here, so we make sure that we've got those new technologies so that our students are learning on those things that are relevant in the industry today, and that's the auto guidance systems and the precision planting with auto shutoffs and those types of things. It's very beneficial to us to get that new equipment here on the farm on a regular basis, and it does provide some real good opportunities for our students.
The R.T. Wright Farm offers its students many hands-on learning opportunities, but one thing it doesn't have is classroom space. Hopefully, in the near future, that will change. In May of this year, Northwest announced that it was the recipient of a $250,000 matching funds grant from the state of Missouri to support the construction of their planned agricultural learning center, which you've heard Rod mention several times throughout this tour. The estimated cost of the facility is $8.5 million and will largely be funded through donations. As we wrapped up the tour on another part of the farm, I asked Rod to explain the university's needs and plans for the facility.
Right now, we don't have any academic space on our farm. As you can see today, it's really a production farm. And then we utilize the production facilities for education. One of the things that we want to do is that we recognize it's been a need for a long time, but really in the last 5 years, we've recognized that, hey, let's try and figure out a way to get some academic space on the farm. And with the proposed Ag Learning Center, that's what we hope to do. It's a proposed 24,000 square foot facility. We'll have classroom space, laboratory space. And then one of the things you notice, as you can see, equipment takes a lot of space, and if we really want to educate not only our students but industry, we need open space, and that facility's got proposed 12,000 square foot of open space where we can pull in equipment or pull in livestock, and we can utilize that for educational purposes. It's one of the things that we think will set us apart. You know, when we start looking at who we are and where we're at, it's kind of unique that we're one of the leading regional universities in the United States with an agriculture department. I've got a student from Michigan that's going to be going into the pre-vet program. I've got a student from Nevada coming in ag education. It's kind of interesting when you start thinking about it. We're located in Northwest Missouri, Maryville, Missouri, town of 11,000, university of 6,000 students. How do they find out about us? And we do a real good job recruiting at National FFA Convention. And they come and they see what we're all about. We do things a little different, and they notice it. And I think that speaks for itself with where we're at and where we're going and what we're trying to do. Our footprint continues to increase. Last year we had undergraduate students from 11 states and 4 countries. And we continue to see that footprint grow. Hidden gems is what I call it. Iowa, they have no regional universities that have an ag department. Nebraska has no regional universities that have an ag department. We're one of the few regional schools that has an ag department. One thing that we do take pride in, right now we sit at 9.2% of the student population, undergraduate population, are ag students. So we've really become kind of an agriculture school, and it's a credit to our administration, credit to our faculty. I really think that we're doing a good job continually trying to look at things, continually trying to improve. As long as we do that, we're industry relevant. I think we've got a bright future ahead of us.
A bright future indeed. As we've learned, the school's enrollment is up, it has great partnerships in place that give students wonderful learning opportunities, the job placement rate is growing, and the dairy cows are happy. What more could they ask for? As I've gotten older, I've come to have a greater appreciation for just how hard my dad worked on our small farm, and how the work never ever stopped. If we fast forward from the time I was a kid to just a couple of years ago, you may recall a Super Bowl ad that featured the great essay by Paul Harvey entitled, "So God Made a Farmer." Well, that speech was originally given in 1978 during an address to the Future Farmers of America at their national convention in Kansas City, Missouri. In fact, some of the people listening to this program right now may have actually been at that convention and heard the speech delivered live. When that ad aired during the game, I happened to be living out of state and was watching the game in a room full of people who were from the East Coast. As it played, they became silent, and when it finished, they all looked at one another with blank expressions. They didn't get it. I got it, and I thought it was one of the best ads I'd ever seen during any Super Bowl game. I guess you have to have experienced just a little bit of country life to appreciate the poignancy of the essay. So in the spirit of Paul Harvey, I'll do my best to interpret his words, but never try to imitate. And on the eighth day, God looked down on his planned paradise and said, "I need a caretaker." So God made a farmer. God said, "I need somebody willing to get up before dawn, milk cows, work all day in the fields, milk cows again, eat supper, then go to town and stay past midnight at a meeting of the school board." So God made a farmer. I need somebody with arms strong enough to wrestle a calf and yet gentle enough to deliver his own grandchild. Somebody to call hogs, tame cantankerous machinery, come home hungry, have to wait lunch until his wife's done feeding visiting ladies, and tell the ladies to be sure and come back real soon, and mean it. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody willing to sit up all night with a newborn colt and watch it die, then dry his eyes and say, maybe next year. I need somebody who can shape an axe handle from a persimmon sprout, shoe a horse with a hunk of car tire, who can make a harness out of hay wire, feed sacks, and shoe scraps, and who, come planting time and harvest season, will finish his 40-hour week by Tuesday noon, then, painted from tractor back, put in another 72 hours. So God made a farmer. God had to have somebody willing to ride the ruts at double speed to get the hay in ahead of the rain clouds, and yet stop in midfield and race to help when he sees the first smoke from a neighbor's place. So God made a farmer. God said, I need somebody strong enough to clear trees and heave bales, yet gentle enough to tame lambs and wean pigs and tend the pink comb pullets, who will stop his mower for an hour to splint the broken leg of a meadowlark. It had to be somebody who'd plow deep and straight and not cut corners. Somebody who'd seed, weed, feed, breed, and rake and disc and plow and plant and tie the fleece and strain the milk and replenish the cell feeder and finish a hard week's work with a 5-mile drive to church. Somebody who'd bale a family together with the soft, strong bonds of sharing, who would laugh and then sigh and then reply with smiling eyes when his son says he wants to spend his life doing what Dad does. So God made a farmer. And so I guess in closing, that's where we come in at Northwest Missouri State University. I'd like to thank my guest this month, Rod Barr, from Northwest's School of Agricultural Sciences. Join us next month as we visit the Printery House at Conception Abbey in Conception, Missouri. We'll sit down with Father Adam to learn about the printing process and the extensive line of greeting cards, calendars, icons, and stationery. Karen will visit with the Maryville Post Office to learn how that greeting card from the Printery House gets to Grandma's house. Thanks again for joining us, and we'll see you next month as we shine the spotlight on industry.
Support for Spotlight on Industry comes from Nottoway County Economic Development, Mazingo Lake Recreation Park, and the City of Maryville. More information on all of our sponsors is available at MarylandMO.org. Spotlight on Industry is a production of KXCV-KRNW and Northwest Missouri State University. Our editor and producer is Karen Lawrence. For more information about how your company can be featured on Spotlight on Industry, please contact Sam Mason at 660-562-1163.